Welcome to the Unmuted Podcast from Los Angeles. I'm Jay Mariotti. My eyeballs did lock, admittedly, when the MLB Network provided those sweeping visuals that we haven't seen in eons. Wrigley Field swallowed by sunshine. The pause in Clayton Kershaw's windup. Max Scherzer already in full uniform. And Bryce Harper swinging in that bandana. Yep, the brainwashers had me going until I started to look around those ballparks at the start of summer camp, they're calling it, in the most ass-backwards year of our lives, and noticed a familiar disparity that has turned America into the globally mocked epicenter of COVID-19. Some players wore masks. Many players, defiantly and foolishly, did not wear masks. I should have known this was the precursor of a debacle, a weekend that reminded us that Major League Baseball has no chance of surviving a pandemic-slammed season when it can't even begin to repair the rampant troubles threatening its very existence. Just hours into Commissioner Rob Manfred's bumbling folly, the testing protocol already resembles a sham, filled with misinformation, if not downright lies, including suspicions that MLB is not being transparent about a sizable number of positive coronavirus tests, all of which shocks nobody accustomed to baseball as the most scandalous of American sports. Forget about Harper, Kershaw, and Scherzer. All attention should be paid right now to Nationals reliever Sean Doolittle, a vocal critic of Manfred and the owners during the embarrassing recent labor squabbles with the players' union. On a Zoom call Sunday, Doolittle told reporters that of his four tests so far, two have required longer than 48 hours for results to return from MLB's ridicule-made Salt Lake City laboratory. The Oakland A's had to cancel a workout for position players because test results weren't available, and other ball clubs were awaiting testing data before resuming. Only 17 remain before opening day, and at this point, Manfred has a better chance of putting people in body bags than pulling off a 60-game season.
This is the Pandemic Proof Podcast with Jay Mariotti, an actual journalist who covered the Bay Area earthquake long after a World Series was postponed, and on 9/11, successfully demanded to keep hosting his national radio show when an advertising boss wanted to switch to network programming. Did you really think Jay ever would stick to sports during a global health crisis? Now, here's Jay Mariotti.
Yes, I think it's about time to mercy kill MLB's corona farce, assuming Sean Doolittle hasn't done so already with his memorable commentary. Doolittle wants Manfred, who has done nothing, to do something, do anything.
There's a lot of players right now that are trying to make decisions that might, you know, be participating in camp that aren't 100% comfortable with where things are at right now. If at any point this I start to feel unsafe, if it starts to take a toll on my mental health, with all these things that we have to worry about and just kind of this cloud of uncertainty hanging over everything, then I'll opt out. Yeah, as I sit here talking to you guys, I still don't have my test results from Friday's test. So, like, I got tested again this morning without knowing the results of my test from Friday. So we got to clean that up. There were clubs that couldn't work out as a team on Friday because they were still waiting for their results. We got our results at like 3 a.m. So we all just kind of set our alarms to, and then we all like got our, the notification when we woke up and we were like, oh, okay, we do have practice. Well, we went to sleep that night, not knowing if we were going to have practice the next day because we didn't know if our results would be in time. And when spring training is only 3 weeks long, you got to have those days. You need every day to try to get ready for the season. I might go crazy before anything else. Just with this, like I said, there's this cloud of uncertainty. There's this kind of, you're always kind of waiting for like more bad news. Like every time I get a text message or something on my phone throughout the day, I'm worried that it's either going to be some kind of bad news, like somebody in the league tested positive, or somebody opted out, or so-and-so broke protocol, and there's pictures of people going out on social media when they shouldn't be. Like there's all these things. And then just the regular procedures of the day, like it's a lot. It's very, very different.
Doolittle rambled on, saying, and I'm quoting, "Those results got to be back. That's one of the biggest things. A lot of guys on the fence decided to try to play and see how this was going to go because we were going to have our results back within 48 hours, end quote. Come on, baseball is slow about everything. You thought a sport that can't finish a game in 3.5 hours would have COVID-19 results in 2 days? At least the NBA has a shot, a fighting chance to resume a season with its Disney World bio bubble awaiting the arrival of players, although a lot of facilities have been shutting down, right? Baseball looks dead before it even starts. I'm quoting Andrew Miller, the Cardinals reliever and a union leader, quote, "I think there's still some doubt that we're going to have a season now. By no means is this a slam dunk," end quote. Mike Trout, baseball's transcendent figure and somebody you don't want to upset, wore a heavy-duty mask in the outfield after voicing considerable apprehension about playing this 60-game season in a pandemic, emphasizing that his wife Jessica is due to deliver the couple's first child next month. Trout said this:
"Honestly, still don't feel comfortable. You know, obviously with the baby coming, there's a lot of stuff going through my mind right now, my wife's mind, my family, just trying to be the safest and most cautious way to get through a season. I've told Billy, I told a bunch of the guys, you know, it's gonna be tough. I gotta be really cautious these next few weeks. So I think the biggest thing is, you know, obviously I don't want to test positive and I don't want to bring it back to my wife. We've thought hard about all this, still thinking about all this. It's a tough time, tough situation we're in. Everybody's got a responsibility in this clubhouse to, you know, social distance, stay inside, wear a mask, and, keep everybody safe."
In essence, Trout was pleading for his Angels teammates not to be COVIDiots here in coronavirus-slammed California, where face coverings are mandatory in public places, and Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti again is warning, quote, "You should assume everybody around you is infectious," end quote. And yet, not minutes later, within a few feet of Trout, maskless teammates were frolicking around the outfield, talking, laughing, while shagging fly balls, oblivious to Trout's concerns about an outbreak. All of this on a weekend when dozens of major leaguers, including Braves star Freddie Freeman, who is not well and will be sitting out a while, tested positive for the virus, along with NASCAR star Jimmy Johnson, more soccer players amid an MLS restart collapse, a main event fighter in UFC 251, and naturally, Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend. Several NBA teams, as I said, shut down facilities because of the virus. And in the haste to rush workouts, Giancarlo Stanton almost took off Masahiro Tanaka's skull inside an eerie Yankee stadium, counterproductive to the championship cause. It all seems so fragile, hapless, hopeless. But come on, at least wear a mask, right? Reports had some major league players discarding masks when, of course, they should be covering up whenever possible as a symbol of their commitment to safety. Also an infomercial for America to stop political mask warfare, and a respectful nod to Trout, who, armed with baseball's most lucrative contract, has every reason to sit out this shotgun season. He still might go home at any moment. Can we blame him? Doolittle was not finished with his rant, taking aim at that mask warfare here in America and the folly of resuming sports. He sounds a lot like me, actually.
It does like bring to mind kind of where we're at in our response to this as a country. Like, we're trying to bring baseball back, in a during a pandemic that's killed 130,000 people, we're way worse off as a country than where we were in March when we shut this thing down. And like, look at where other developed countries are in their response to this. We haven't done any of the things that other countries have done to bring sports back. Sports are like the reward of a functioning society, a functional society. And we're just like trying to just bring it back, even though we've taken none of the steps to have it to flatten the curve, or whatever you want to say, to like, we did flatten the curve for a little bit, but we didn't use that time to do anything productive. We just opened back up for Memorial Day. We decided we're done with it. Like, if there aren't sports, it's going to be because people are not wearing masks, because the response to this has been so politicized. Like, we need help from the people, from the general public. If they want to watch baseball, like, please wear a mask, like, social distance, keep washing your hands. Like, we can't just have virus fatigue and think it's been like, well, it's been 4 months, like, we're over it. This has been enough time, right? We've waited long enough. Like, shouldn't sports come back now? No, there's things we have to do in order to bring the stuff back.
Amen. Sean Doolittle for commissioner. Or president. Sean Doolittle for president. It's time to ask the question nobody in sports wants to face. If enough marquee athletes bow out, will competitive integrity be diluted to the point it's useless to continue what would be an illegitimate season? The thought of a total sports shutdown mortifies the broadcast networks that drive the sports engine, especially Fox Sports and ESPN, both of which might crumble if the cash cow NFL cancels its $15 billion a year TV dominant season as ESPN parent Disney suffers an abysmal fiscal third quarter. The pressure already is palpable as athletes begin to realize that they ultimately hold the power in this restart ecosystem. If too many players don't want to play and just scram, as David Price and Victor Oladipo have done, and Buster Posey is pondering, as are many others, down goes MLB, down goes the NBA, and down goes the NFL. And once college football players and their parents realize they are assuming health risks without being paid, down go Clemson and the other superpowers, and down goes the season. And then down go the TV networks, doomed to financial disaster. A baseball season is not a baseball season without Mike Trout, and as more prominent athletes fail tests and suffer injuries, bubble or no bubble, sports become less about the games and more about a coronavirus survival test that fans will not enjoy, much less the players. Trout had more to say.
And it's going to come down to how safe we're going to be. If there's an outbreak or something happens, you know, these next few weeks, you definitely got to consider. I definitely got to reconsider. It's just, there's a lot of questions. I got to do, obviously, baseball. I love baseball, but I got to do what's right for my family sometimes. And, you know, majority of the time, I got to do everything for my family. And, it's going to be a tough decision if something happens up down the road. You know, I think it's a tough situation for everybody. I talked to a lot of guys across the league, and they're texting me a lot. I'm not going to name any names, but just, you know, it's just a crazy – they're all thinking the same thing. Is this going to work? We just got to stay safe and obviously be as cautious as we can.
For all his wondrous skills on the field, never has Trout been more valuable than he was in that virtual interview room. Passionately and reasonably, he spoke to a sports industry that insists on restarting play when common sense and workplace ethics demand a shutdown until 2021. As infections continue to surge and new single-day case records are established daily in the U.S., leagues and networks that once derided President Trump, they're now conveniently embracing his delusional belief that the virus will, quote, just disappear. Now they're in lockstep with Trump. Driven by massive, stubborn business egos and a hunger to recoup billions of dollars, the industry's power elite thinks it can beat down that virus and prove that humankind is bigger than a killer disease. And the athletes, They have been conditioned most of their lives to think they're superheroes, when in reality, nothing is heroic about resuming sports amid this still raging crisis, and I think they're starting to get it. This is all stupid, actually, and exceedingly dangerous, a recipe for outbreaks in all leagues and an abrupt ending to all sports seasons, which underscores the importance of Trout, the preeminent baseball superhero, speaking out. He's not alone. Quote, I think we've seen with these owners, they're not scared of anything, and they're not scared to put anybody at risk if they get the opportunity to, especially if it makes them money, end quote, said Giants pitcher Jeff Samardzija. Not only is it unfair to ask athletes to resume seasons and assume all health risks, commissioners and owners, remember, will be bunkered down with their accountants. The reset ignores data that sounds alarms about the outsized impact of the virus in the black community. When about 75% of NBA players and 70% of NFL players identify themselves as African American, the discussion has been suspiciously non-existent about, one, a COVID-19 mortality rate that is 2.3 times higher for black people than for whites and Hispanics, that according to the Washington Post, and two, a metric that shows African Americans are 5 times more likely to be hospitalized with COVID-19 than white people, that according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The leagues can take all the measures they want to appease black athletes in a turbulent, potentially explosive summer, from the NBA's decision to paint Black Lives Matter on the Disney World courts and allow players to wear social justice slogans on jerseys, to the NFL's plan to play Lift Every Voice and Sing before the Star-Spangled Banner during pregame ceremonies. Daniel Snyder finally can find a non-racist nickname for Washington's NFL franchise, and the Cleveland Indians can do the same. More on that later. If players don't feel safe in a pandemic, they're not playing, no matter what the leagues are doing for them. MLB, mired in a disastrous diversity crisis on all levels, looks even worse when Price follows Ian Desmond in opting out. It was Desmond who said baseball is failing in its efforts to aid minority participation, writing on Instagram, and this was powerful, quote, think about it. Right now in baseball, we've got a labor war. We've got rampant individualism on the field. In clubhouses, we've got racist, sexist, homophobic jokes or flat-out problems. We've got cheating. We've got a minority issue from the top down. One African-American GM, two African-American managers, less than 8% black players, no black majority team owners. Perhaps most disheartening of all, says Desmond, is a puzzling lack of focus on understanding how to change those numbers, a lack of focus on making baseball accessible and possible for all kids, not just those who are privileged enough to afford it. If baseball is America's pastime, maybe it's never been a more fitting one than now. End quote. Ian Desmond, well said, powerfully said. The NBA does have racial peace, but to prevent the virus from spreading in the bubble, all players will have to obey the safety protocol and commit weeks, if not months, to life in isolation. Do they have it in them? Of course they don't. I'm not the only one doubting it. I'm quoting the All-Star guard Damian Lillard, quote, my confidence ain't great because you're telling me you're going to have 22 teams full of players following all the rules when we have 100% freedom. Everybody don't follow all the rules, end quote. Said Spurs star DeMar DeRozan, who's publicly shared battles with mental health, underlined another issue with players being in virtual lockdown. Will they go stir crazy? DeRozan can't understand why ping pong doubles games are banned. Quote, guys can't do this, but we can do this and battle over each other on the court, he said. I got through 10 lines of the safety handbook and just put it down because it became so frustrating and overwhelming at times because you just never thought you'd be in a situation of something like this. It's hard to process. Then there was the eloquence of J.J. Redick. The NBA veteran delivered maybe the defining observation of the restart. certainly speaking for many athletes when he said this.
So to say that we have like any sort of comfort level would be a lie. There is no comfort level.
Right.
We're not with our families. We're not at our homes. We're isolated in a bubble in the middle of a hot spot in the middle of Florida, while there's social unrest going on in the country, and we're 3 months away from potentially the most important election in our lifetimes. Yeah. So there's all of that going on. Now, we have to figure out a way to perform and play basketball and all that, because I do believe it is the right thing to go and play, but there is absolutely no comfort. No. And I know the league and I know the union has tried to create this environment, and I get it, but there's so much else going on right now. We're going to go play and we're going to do our best, but we realize there's so many more important things.
All weekend, like a toxic drip, the News Digest offered more reasons not to play sports in 2020. I even read a story suggesting the PGA Tour will continue to risk outbreaks as long as winners hug their caddies, as Daniel Berger did after winning the Charles Schwab Challenge. Maybe that's why ESPN.com refused to budge for hours on what it viewed as the leading story. Joey Chestnut and Mickey Sudo. Is that? I'm sorry. Joey Chestnut and Mickey Sudo. My apologies, continued to dominate Nathan's famous dog-eating contest, Chestnut devouring 75 this time, even when separated from other slobberers by fiberglass panels.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1,
put down your hot dogs on.
Some things change, some remain the same.
75 hot dogs and buns! A world record! 75 hot dogs
and buns! 75.
75!
And
that
you
would
hear
be a record.
George Shea, the unofficial 75 hot dogs and buzz, Joey Chestnut. Your 13th time now.
Just
Nathan's famous champion.
The pace is unbelievable. He just keeps driving it.
Once and future king. With a new world record of 75 Nathan's Famous hot dogs and buns in 10 minutes, Joey Chestnut!
No, it wasn't proper journalistic judgment by ESPN, but it did generate a grin. When was the last time we grinned about sports or really anything? They say audio reading is the new way to explore a book, so here is my latest column from the Barrett Sports Media site titled, Behold the Purge of the Racist Sports Nickname. Never usually means never, particularly when a boorish despot orders never to be used in capital letters. Quote, we'll never change the name, it's that simple, never, you can use caps, end quote. Daniel Snyder said 7 years ago, referring to the nickname of his NFL team, the Washington Redskins. But the outrage and flames of 2020 have melted away never, even in the previously intractable domain of certain racially insensitive sports names. The George Floyd horror itself might not have penetrated Snyder's closed mind, but it did terrify millions of Americans who do business with FedEx, the title sponsor of the Redskins Stadium, and other prominent partners such as Nike and Pepsi. The shrinking of never, capital letters, is a simple equation. Consumers complain, CEOs react, and pressure is applied on Snyder to either change the name or lose those companies as backers. And unlike 2013, when Snyder made his flip comment to USA Today and prompted this response from then-President Barack Obama, I'm quoting Obama, if I were the owner of the team and I knew that there was a name of my team, even if it had a storied history, that was offending a sizable group of people, I'd think about changing, end quote. The new pressures aren't as political as they are financial. If Snyder wants to avoid a mass corporate boycott of his team, and if he wants a new stadium to have a lucrative sponsorship at the old RFK Stadium site in D.C., he finally must bury a nickname that is insulting to Native American culture and belongs nowhere near any respectful 21st century context. Quote, "We have communicated to the team in Washington our request that they change the team name," end quote. FedEx said in a statement to media outlets, keeping in mind that the company chairman, Frederick Smith, is a minority stakeholder in the Redskins ownership structure, which in turn led to this quote. "In the last few weeks, we have had ongoing discussions with Dan, and we are supportive of this important step," end quote, said the NFL commissioner, Roger Goodell, who cannot flip the switch to wokeness in a Black Lives Matter video and still allow Redskins as a nickname, which in turn will lead to a new nickname that will be offensive to nobody other than racists who aim to be offensive anyway. So if 2020 has been the most disruptive and potentially devastating year of our lives, we'll also remember it for attacking hatred as it never, capitals, never has been attacked. Eyes have been opened, monuments removed, and in due time, slurs such as Redskins and Indians will be purged from the sports lexicon by owners who are not heroes, but billionaire businessmen with clenched teeth. This always was a complex topic for me as a columnist in Chicago, where nicknames such as Blackhawks and Fighting Illini were hailed by the NHL franchise and University of Illinois as proud nicknames that honored Native Americans. And most fans of those teams did agree. Now, maybe those same fans will put down their beers and think. For decades, professional franchises with contentious names have looked the other way, impervious to heat and ultra-protective of valuations linked to tradition and market size. Much as Snyder is loathed throughout football, much as his team has been a bust through most of his 21 years as the owner, the Redskins have been financial winners, currently worth $3.1 billion, ranking 14th among the world's most valuable sports teams and 5th in NFL circles. But growth has flatlined as the Redskins struggle in their aging stadium, and Snyder needed a game changer in his front office. I doubt he was shrewd enough to realize Ron Rivera might transform his life and his franchise's shaky standing in America when, in January, he hired Rivera as the head coach. But even if Rivera doesn't win much, and as long as Snyder is the owner, those fortunes likely won't improve, he will be remembered as the pioneer who gave vision to a blind boss and urged him to sandblast the name Redskins. Of Mexican and Puerto Rican descent, Rivera is the NFL's only Hispanic head coach and one of only four league head coaches of color. When the latest dump Redskins avalanche came after George Floyd's death, Snyder couldn't have had a better in-house ally than Rivera, the son of an army officer who grew up on military bases. At his introductory news conference, Rivera said the nickname issue, quote, is of personal importance to me, end quote, adding that he looked forward to working with Snyder, quote, to make sure we continue the mission of honoring and supporting Native Americans and our military, end quote. The breakthrough came Saturday, Independence Day in America, when Rivera told the Washington Post that he and Snyder have been hard at work on a new name. Ever think you'd read those words? Hard at work on a new name? Quote, if we get it done in time for the season, it would be awesome, said Rivera, mentioning that he especially likes two nickname possibilities. What's fascinating here is how Rivera spent part of his formative years in the Washington metropolis and became a Redskins fan. Oh, he also loved the nickname. Quote, it was hard to fathom that it was in any way a racist thing, to be honest with you, Rivera told the Post. Quote, now putting it in perspective, there's been a change. My eyes are wide open. End quote. Because the Indians are based in Cleveland and not immersed in the politics and media swarm of the nation's capital, their ownership group hasn't been scrutinized nationally like Snyder. Only last year did the team finally remove the stereotypical, cartoonish, hideous, red-faced Chief Wahoo from its uniforms and caps. Will the Indians, after 105 years, finally seek a new nickname? Or will they continue to bow to pressure from traditionalists and racists? This time, they do sound real. I'm quoting, "We are committed to engaging our community and appropriate stakeholders to determine the best path forward with regard to our team name," end quote, the Indians said in a statement. Like Rivera, Cleveland manager Terry Francona is publicly lobbying for change from the people who pay his salary. When a fan of a team sees a popular skipper take a stand, and the team knows Francona is doing so, it does send a message that life is progressing at Progressive Field. Here was Francona, who has discussed the issue previously with front office bosses Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff. He says they have talked for years.
I know in the past when I've been asked about whether it's our name or the Chief Wahoo, I think I would usually answer and say, I know that we're never trying to be disrespectful. And I still feel that way. But I don't think that's a good enough answer today. I think it's time to move forward. I was happy that we are going to, I mean, Chris and I and Cherney, we've talked about this for years, you know, by ourselves. Doesn't have to be a meeting. I'm glad that we're going to be open to listening, because I think that's probably the most important thing right now is being willing to listen, not necessarily just talk.
And like Rivera, who is 58, the 61-year-old Francona acknowledges his belief system needed a revision. Quote, "Even at my age, you don't want to be too old to learn or realize that maybe I've been ignorant of some things and to be ashamed of it and try to be better," Francona said. Quote, "I'm glad we're going to be open to listening, because I think that's probably the most important thing right now is being able to listen, willing to listen, and not necessarily just talk," end quote. Justice Snyder says he has launched an evaluation of the nickname and logo. The Indians say they are examining the matter. Consider it an incremental pushing of a story to its inevitable rightful end. It's going to happen. No more Redskins, no more Indians. Major League Baseball, as I said, mired in a diversity crisis on all levels, cannot afford to dawdle. And that also applies to the Atlanta Braves, who ditched their urban ballpark for white suburbia 3 years ago and still don't view their nickname and accompanying tomahawk chop chant as offensive. Wasn't it just last fall when Cardinals pitcher Ryan Helsley, a member of the Cherokee Nation, was critical of that chant? Before the next playoff game, the team did not distribute the red foam tomahawks that fans have waved for decades in the state of Georgia. Look, if they can take that step, the Braves certainly can embark on a more monumental social mission. For now, they say the team, quote, honors, supports, and values the Native American community that never will change, end quote. So, Braves and Blackhawks are still acceptable when Redskins and Indians are not. This is no time to prolong the justification game when Daniel Snyder can take a jackhammer to the word never in capitals. Anybody can. Now it's time for The Buzz, our regular deep dive into sports and life. Chris joins the program. Chris, as ominous signs, numerous positive tests, and other urgent matters threaten the resumption of sports, the concerns of Sean Doolittle and Mike Trout remind desperate leagues and TV networks that players can go home at any moment and end this folly. The MLB protocol already looks disastrous. Chris, at what point should sports just give up and restart all of this in 2021 before, I don't know, somebody dies amid this corona farce?
I wish Mike Trout would go home. I really do. Considering we haven't known the sound of his voice as he has collected hundreds of millions of dollars playing baseball, and truly, in the Angels' case, since they haven't been competitive almost his entire time there, I believe he's been to the playoff once, He plays in front of a stadium, which is 5 minutes from my house, that is full, rooting him on every night. And diehard Angel fans that are in Orange County and the Inland Empire, which is Riverside, San Bernardino, about, you know, 30 minutes from Angel Stadium, they love Mike Trout. That's what keeps him in business, okay? And TV network deals, like the one that's here in Southern California, where very few people, if you compare it to the Dodgers or the Lakers or any other major sporting event, watch the Angels, but they're diehard fans. And those diehard fans want to watch Mike Trout play baseball. And again, Mike Trout has a pregnant wife. I've heard it a million times. We all have. So Mike Trout, go home. Go home. Everybody has said from the beginning, if you don't want to play, don't play. But he wants to get paid, Jay. That's what it's always about, right? He's getting paid. So then keep your mouth closed. I don't understand. We've heard it. You could have stayed home. Now you're going to remind us how uncomfortable this is and how you don't agree with it and there's uneasy feeling. There's uneasy feeling in everybody's life right now, not just you, Mike Trout. And you're a multi-millionaire, okay, with a players union that has gone above and beyond to continue to fight for you. And yes, Sean Doolittle has said that the testing is a joke. How's the guy, and I know I always go back to this week after week, the guy at Target that's working there, is he getting tested every day when he goes to work? Is anybody cautious? Then people say, well, don't go to the supermarket, order your groceries. Okay, let's play that out. Are the people at the grocery store that are packing your groceries in a bag and touching them and handling them, are they tested? Are they regulated? How about the guy who's delivering it to your door? Enough. It's insanity. If you don't want to play for millions of dollars, don't play. But enough. And again, then we take this political winding road, and Sean Doolittle did it. And listen, Sean Doolittle, his points are great. But then we get into the political aspect of this country, this horrific country, Jay, where men get paid millions upon millions of dollars to play baseball. God, how can a country like this exist? We're doing so many things wrong, and we probably are. We're a country that is bigger than everyone else, with the exception of India, and we have a lot of problems here. But really, our country is made up of 50 states that are like 50 individual countries, so it's a little different than just other places in the world. And if we had a different president, would things be different? If we were earlier on this, sure. But the reality is many, 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 many people are going to work every day, not getting tested, not getting protected, because they have to put food, or at least attempt to put food, on the table. And I just wish these players, before they would get on their soapbox and want to take their political daggers at our president and our government, which I get, or want to take daggers at the owners, because we know how much baseball players and the players union hate the owners and the owners hate them. This is what it's infuriating, Jay.
And Chris, if the year 2020 has thrown life into chaos, at least the skies are clearer, the roads aren't as congested, and idiots like Daniel Snyder are being forced to change the racist nicknames of their teams. Your thoughts on the great purge of Redskins and Indians?
So here's my thoughts on it, Jay. Listen, I have never found it truly offensive. Now, I am part, and again, this is with a big asterisk because I don't connect with this side, but my father is Hispanic. He's half Mexican, the other half is Spanish and Native American, or I grew up knowing it as Indian, and nobody has been offended in my family. I actually mentioned it to him yesterday. I got to see my parents for lunch, and yes, we were socially distant and we had masks on until we were eating. I digress. So he wasn't offended by this. I'm not going to say that we are being overly politically targeted now, because again, all this comes out of the Black Lives Matter movement, which comes out of George Floyd being literally lynched and tortured in front of us on video. I would like to get back to that. I would like to get back to figuring out if changing the name of the Redskins and the Indians gets us to the point where we can avoid police brutality on minorities, then great. But we're taking a winding road now with a list of things that we need to fix in the world, and that's fine. It doesn't bother me. And here's the thing, if Native Americans are bothered by it, which I know there's plenty and people have been outspoken, I'm fine with changing the name. It's not that big of a deal. And yes, it is moving and progressing to a better world, I guess. But if we don't fix the actual issue that created this outrage and created this movement, then it's a joke. Like many things in this world, then it's a joke.
And Chris, I'm about to comment on the racist creep who remains the face of Barstool Sports, but might not be for much longer. What is your take on Dave Portnoy and his so-called apology the other day, which likely was caused by the same pressure from sponsors such as NASCAR and Penn National that Daniel Snyder has faced?
So here's the thing. Going back many years where Barstool has been prominent in a sports media culture, I have not given Barstool a lot of respect, not just Dave Portnoy, but a lot of the people in it. I have thought that their product was targeted towards people that I didn't connect with. Younger, sort of that fraternity crowd. I was never in a fraternity. Sort of the bro thing, right? And over this pandemic, and it really started with listening to a podcast with Erica, the CEO of Barstool, where I have a lot of respect for her. And then I started to explore a little bit more of Barstool's product. And some of the things they do, I found humorous during the pandemic, especially the first few months when there was literally nothing going on, right? We were just waiting for the NFL draft to come. And things like Dave Portnoy's for frozen pizza review, I thought was funny. And a few other things that don't involve the actual base of what their business is, but some of the ancillary podcasts and stuff, I have found somewhat entertaining during all this. I think everybody has the right to apologize. We've talked about this. You've talked about this. So I accept his apology. I think it comes after countless issues with that site and some of the things they have said and written about. And yes, Dave Portnoy built a tremendous business out of delivering a newspaper in Boston that was basically, you know, a gambling little newspaper that he would hand out to what it is now. But he has taken a lot of capital from first the Chernin Group and now Penn. And yeah, they're going to want him to apologize. And they're not going to want a person who's the face of it to be somebody tied to some of this stuff. I think if you compare some of the things that Barstool has said and written, this would be one of the less offensive things that has now caught some fire. And again, Barstool has a very rabid fan base that will put pressure on people, that will attack people on social media, that will go after people if they don't like them, or they don't, or Dave Portnoy or any of the crew there makes it clear that this person is a enemy of the state, and the state being the Barstool rabid fan base. So, and again, there's also an extent of cancel culture now that has become, and again, like I just said, this is the result of the George Floyd situation, which has led to a lot of progress and a lot of people being outspoken, and that's great. I'm not okay with cancel culture because I wouldn't want somebody to go in my past or dig up things that I've said or funny bits I've done on the radio, which I've done many. I mean, I always talk about a morning show that I did way back when on Fox with Tony Bruno and Andrew Siciliano. It was 2002. It was 2003. It was pre-Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl showing her nipple. The things we did every day, and we made fun of everybody. We made fun of ourselves. We had a lot of fun. We had huge results and huge success. But when you listen back to those tapes, it's like, well, we wouldn't last on the air 10 seconds now. I don't think that's good. I think it's okay to laugh. I think it's okay to have fun. I think it's okay to joke around. There's a difference between somebody doing a joke in jest, okay, and having fun. Now, saying the N-word, using blackface, that's just dumb. That's not funny. Having fun or making somebody laugh or smile, that's a lot different. If something wants to be viewed in that context as racist, that racist act is a lot different than four police officers murdering and torturing a human being. And again, I keep coming back to that because it seems like that's not getting mentioned anymore. We're on to attacking Dave Portnoy and Daniel Snyder and all these hot button media things that play real well on Twitter. And guys like J.J. Redick get on their soapbox and talk about all the things going on in the world. How could we play basketball? Okay. How did we play basketball while innocent minorities were being murdered by police officers for years, J.J.? That didn't seem to ever resonate.
Okay, thanks, Chris.
And now a final Mariotti commentary too hot for ESPN, too smart for the internet, and too chill for political activism. Take it away, Jay.
To describe Dave Portnoy as despicable only skims the word choices. He's a hate monger and a sicko, no other way to put it, and after taking five showers and stooping to talk about him, I am tempted to hire a killer shark to devour his every body part, including a penis if he has one, recalling his career-propelling stunt of posting naked photos of Tom Brady's then 2-year-old son. Two. Portnoy has used the N-word liberally, approved of blackface costumes, and said Colin Kaepernick bears a strong resemblance to Osama bin Laden, referring to the quarterback-turned-activist as, quote, an ISIS guy, throw a head wrap on this guy, he's a terrorist, end quote, Portnoy. These glimpses of subhumanity were from 2016 videos that have resurfaced, one in which he belts out job rules, living it up thusly, quote, to all my N-words, he didn't use N-word, he just used the N-word, I've been living it up, end quote. This is the nutbag who also referred to ESPN's Samantha Ponder as, quote, a bleeping slut. He didn't say bleeping, end quote, and urged her to, quote, sex it up and be slutty on the air. You wonder what this creep does and says on an hourly basis, an experience from which I'm saved as somebody who ignores his digital operation, Barstool Sports. As always, Portnoy excuses his racism as comedy and satire, a cop-out Charles Manson could have tapped, I suppose. Like other megalomaniacs, he is too far gone for help. But what disturbs me is how media companies and sports leagues have embraced his brand of fungal disease without regard for the stench they are inheriting. Peter Chernin, a film producer and former Fox TV executive, enabled Portnoy by buying majority control of Barstool in 2016. ESPN, in another hazy stab during the John Skipper era, tried a late-night show called Barstool Van Talk that lasted one episode following a Bristol revolt. Inevitably, a gambling company chased the same crude dude demographic. I'm going to copyright that, by the way, crude dude demographic, because everybody in sports radio knows what I'm talking about. With Penn National Gaming, Inc. spending $163 million back in January for a 36% stake. Then there's hypocritical NASCAR, which spent millions last year on a Barstool marketing partnership and only bought itself a perception crisis at the worst possible time. Right now, the circuit took what I thought was a historic step in separating from its racist past in the recent driver's march that supported black racer Bubba Wallace. Yet the relationship NASCAR has with Portnoyism continues somehow, which is akin to tying a noose in Wallace's garage. Here was NASCAR's statement after the death of George Floyd, and I'm quoting, "While our sport has made progress over the years, there remains much work to be done, and we fully embrace our responsibility to help bridge the racial divide that continues to exist in our country. We must do better, and our commitment to promoting equality and inclusion continues, and will never waver," end quote, NASCAR. Except when keeping a business pact with a racist. Oh. There is no more obvious conclusion, along with water being wet and the sun being warm, than this. Portnoy should be immediately removed from the company he founded before Barstool is tagged permanently as a racist shop. And while I sense he'll need to be strapped to a gurney and sedated while hauled away by 100 men in white suits, perhaps a company coup finally was set in motion last week against the man-child who claims he's uncancelable. That's his word. A Barstool host who calls himself PFT Commenter from a show called Pardon My Take, I don't listen to this network, ripped Portnoy for not considering the company's minority employees, yeah, right? When he refused to apologize, Portnoy said, "I'm not going to bend the knee." That's what he said early last week for his past comments. This followed a podcast by some of those very minority employees, led by, yep, former NFL lineman, a big guy, Willie Colon, host of Barstool's Two Bigs podcast, who lashed out at Portnoy. They titled the podcast, and I'm quoting, this is their show title, N-I-G-G-E-R, end quote, short for Now It's Gonna Get Extremely Real. Said Colon, quote, "I said to Dave, for the people who work here and work for you, we're kind of offended by it, so when you throw your middle fingers up at the cancel culture, you're really throwing your middle fingers up at us." And he was like, quote, I hear you, but I have a bigger following than you. I write your checks, and the people who support me in Barstool help me write your checks, so bleeping, that's not what he said, eat a dick. He did say that. End quote. Portnoy to Willie Colon. Again, a former offensive lineman who could squash this guy in his palms. I wish he would. For a nanosecond, I thought they might be duping us in a scam for more Barstool attention, but I don't think so. When the subject is race, amid this country's most heated year of racial tension in decades, nobody is play acting. This is all very real and all very dangerous. Wrote the PFT commenter guy, quote, I don't know exactly how to fix this short of making Willie Dave's boss. End quote. I love this. Quote, but I do know that what's happened over the last 4 days is not going to work in the long term. Wow. PFT guy has a social conscience. I bet he hasn't always had it. Just when convenient. Just when probably told to have it by the company sub-boss. Or maybe NASCAR. Or maybe Penn National. I'm just telling you how this stuff works. You have no idea. All right, NASCAR is not commenting, nor is Penn National. My two emails, yeah, I sent two emails, went unanswered. So, for now, their silence we interpreted as a tacit acceptance of all things Portnoy, which means those companies aren't as committed to stamping out racism as they claim, such as Penn National's stated vow to, quote, stand united against hate, racism, violence, and intolerance of any sort, and salute all the peaceful warriors and protesters on the front lines of social injustice making their voice heard, end quote. Where the company erred was allowing Portnoy to have all editorial control over content, thus nullifying supposed guardrails prohibiting, quote, language that encourages underage gambling, illegal bets, or comments that might be deemed as harassment or discrimination of women or minorities, for example, end quote. Yeah, for example, yep, where's Penn National? I need a statement. I need one from NASCAR. Nothing. They sold out to a madman, a compromise that should be known by people of all races when they visit Penn National's 41 gaming and racing properties in 19 states and live betting properties in 6 states, Barstool Sports Book app included. One reason for the sellout, Portnoy has had such a hypnotic hold on his stoolies, sheep, that's what they call them, even as a pandemic day trader, that Penn National stock jumped 15% after he dropped the name on CNBC's Mad Money last month. 15%? No wonder they love this guy. Oh, he's a racist, but hey, 15% jump? Wow. Love him. Never mind the workforce that Penn National could have salvaged without the Barstool investment. After furloughing 26,000 employees in April, the company filed notice it will lay off 233 people next month at its corporate offices. The execs sure love that stock bump, but really, for how much longer? Portnoy did attempt to apologize, emphasis on attempt.
Okay, emergency press conference time. So like 2 days ago, I did another emergency press conference, basically on cancellation culture. And I ranted and raved because some Twitter account had dug up 3 videos that were like 4 to 5 years old with very questionable jokes, jokes that clearly if made today would be like, how could you fucking say that? This guy's a racist idiot to say it now. Nobody really brought any attention to it 5 years ago. And I viewed it, the people who dug this up, they sent it to everybody who fucking hates me, hates Barstool, so they retweet it and get it going. And I really viewed it as just pure Barstool haters. I didn't really look at it as like, oh, this is about a specific issue. It's more about how much they fucking hate me. It's the same thing they've been doing for 2 decades, pouring through everything I've ever written, said, done to try to bring me down. And I wasn't going to apologize because I knew I was trying to be funny. I wasn't trying to offend. The intent is just to make people laugh. So it's basically like, fuck you, all right? I'm not going to apologize. Here's what's happened. Unbeknownst to me, and something I didn't plan on doing, I alienated a lot of the people who work for me now. And one of the great things that Barstool has done over the years, more minorities, more women, and we have a bunch of African American employees now, and all their followers like, how the fuck can you work for this guy? This guy won't even admit he did anything wrong. He's a racist asshole. And PFT today wrote an article, is like, our black employees should not have to, you know, defend or speak for Dave or defend why they work here. And they're absolutely right. So I did a very poor job in that first video.
whatever that was, surely is in response to the pressures NASCAR, Penn National, and others put on Barstool, not unlike FedEx, Nike, Pepsi, and Daniel Snyder. Word to the wise, Portnoy still thinks he's getting away with something. Do you remember Eddie Haskell? Do you remember Bart Simpson? This is a racist version of those two. This creep is never going to change. Get rid of him before he ruins your company. That's our show. Thanks to Mac Miller, no longer with us, for his musical contribution in the show open. For our producer and editor, Chris, I am Jay, reminding you to never, ever let anybody or anything mute you in life as long as you're not spewing racist crap.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way, and God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah. We're living on the edge. By the color of his skin.